From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Tuesday, October 15th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets, you get to make the call. A good one, it says you can't expect people to look eye to eye with you if you're looking down on them. True that. The problem these days is there are so few people that we can look up to.
Get used to disappointment.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted history.
This is it.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
All righty.
You might be quizzed.
No, I don't think we will. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1878, the Edison Electric Light Company began operation, and suddenly people in the area around the plant started getting electric bills. Hey, Martha, you know anything about this? And it was on this day in 1928, the airship Graf Zeppelin completed its first transatlantic flight, landing at Lakehurst, New Jersey. Later, it went on to circumnavigate the entire world and did so with no accidents of any kind. Ultimately, the ship was scrapped when it just, I don't know, old age? Should have been put into a museum, though. But it would have taken one heck of a large building to house it.
Staggers the imagination.
What was it President Lincoln said about a house divided? Well, if Donald Trump manages to defeat Kamala Harris at the polls, and it looks like he will, he's likely going to face an even tougher opponent in court. And that would be her campaign attorney, Mark Elias. According to Real Clear Investigations' Paul Sperry, the attorney, this guy, Mark Elias, is a seasoned Democrat Party attorney, and he's filed more than 60 pre-election lawsuits aimed at preventing Trump from being elected again. And his filings target what he describes as Republican voter suppression tactics, such as requiring voters to present identification at polling stations. Imagine that. He is alleging that our efforts, we conservatives, efforts to make these elections honest and to demand that people present some form of identification at the polling places is somehow unconstitutional? Well, I would argue it's very constitutional. But when has the Constitution ever been a roadblock to Democrats? I'm telling you, my friend, Democrats are evil. They are evil. Now, I'm not saying that every person who has a tendency to vote Democrat is evil, but the Democrat Party is evil. It's an evil party. I hope I've made that very clear. Pardon the redundancy, but I get the feeling that I can't really emphasize that enough. So, echoing a common Democrat position, this guy Mark Elias argues that these measures are racist strategies, you know, asking for, of course, I mean, that's a tired, old, and by now debunked argument. And thank God it's been debunked. It's even been debunked by blacks that there's some racist component to demanding ID at the time of a person wanting to vote. But Elias argues that these are racist strategies designed to make it more difficult for minority voters to cast their ballots. When I would love to argue with this son of a and tell him, hey, Bubba, where have you been? You've been living under a rock for the last 30 years? We conservatives want to get every possible black vote. Anyhow, at the same time, Elias has been sending letters to election officials in Georgia and other key swing states threatening legal action if they uphold challenges to voter rolls to remove non-citizens and other ineligible registrants. Our friend Mr. Sperry writes, some Georgia officials complain that his intimidation tactics are interfering with county registrar's ability to check the qualifications of voters. See, interesting point. And he says, if Trump is declared the winner, the hard-charging attorney threatens to overturn his election by deploying an army of more than 75 lawyers to sue for ballot recounts in several swing states. And then Sperry further noted, he says, Trump in turn has threatened to lock Elias up for election interference. As ABC News moderator David Muir pointed out in last month's presidential debate between Trump and Kamala Harris. And, you know, maybe he ought to do it. Because what I see coming up after the November 5th election is not pretty. I see Donald Trump winning. I see Donald Trump winning, and after he wins, the loony left is going to go insane. You remember that picture of that gal, that ugly gal with the glasses, screaming at the sky? Remember that? And that was after the 2016 win? Well, I see that manifesting itself in physical form. I think the leftists are going to go totally insane, and they are going to start a war. It's going to be right here on our streets, in the streets of America. And then what's going to happen is the red states aren't going to tolerate it. They're going to lock everybody up. The blue states are going to tolerate it, and they're going to encourage these people, and then our civil war begins. But here's the thing. The red states are going to win because the red states are clustered in the centermost portion of the country, going north to south. And the blue states will be divided because you have a cluster of blue states in the east and a cluster of blue states in the west. We'll have the majority too, by the way. I mean, I here again, I've said this before. I don't see how civil war can be avoided. And when you have bastards like this guy Mark Elias pulling this crap, I mean, how else do you expect this to end? Trump is going to have to lock that bastard up. And this guy Elias really exemplifies the increasing role of lawfare. It was greatly increased during this Biden administration, and it's becoming huge. I mean, it's a huge part of our elections now. Lawfare. So, a recently released RNC memo reveals that the Trump campaign has filed or joined 123 election-related lawsuits across 26 states, with 82 of these cases in battleground states, aiming to address what they term as voter fraud. You got to do it. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of taxpayer money, but it's got to be done. And additionally, the campaign has enlisted thousands of lawyers to counter what a Trump attorney anticipates is going to be an onslaught of litigation. And this is going to be from the Harris campaign challenging the election outcomes. They have done this in every election that they have lost since 2000. Remember the hanging chads in Florida? Remember that? So naturally, this extensive legal team is also prepared to initiate recounts if Trump doesn't secure a victory. Now, Sperry continued, he said, election experts say that these GOP efforts, fueled in part by Trump's claim that Democrats stole the 2020 election, are playing catch-up. Democrats have long been at the forefront of strategies to use the court to impact elections, and no one's been more important to that cause than Elias, who keeps a sign behind his desk that warns, "Beware of attack Democrat." To many Democrats, he's a hero. The headline of a 2022 profile article of Elias in the New Yorker, which is as far left as you can get, called Elias the first defense against Trump's assault on democracy. That just really, really angers me every time I hear that. This allegation that Trump is an assault against democracy. These bastards in the Democrat Party are the ultimate assault on democracy. They're an assault on this republic. Now, Tom Fitton, and this is a guy I really respect. I really like this guy. Tom Fitton, he's the president of Judicial Watch. You see him all over YouTube. Well, he told Sperry, he says, Mr. Elias is part of a massive and well-funded partisan leftist operation, notorious for using lawfare to undermine election integrity, making it easier to steal elections. And that's the antithesis of democracy. Republicans, meanwhile, well, they've been preparing for this, thank God. RNC National Committee co-chair Lara Trump, who's no dummy, this lady is sharp. She said in April during an interview that her organization's been ramping up in preparation for the coming election cycle to heavily monitor key polling centers, beginning with early voting in many parts of the country and remaining vigilant up to and through the November election. And in an interview with Newsmax TV host Eric Bolling, Lara said that we all know 2020 wasn't on the up and up. Now, she didn't clarify what she meant specifically, but you get the idea, right? And in any event, Lara Trump was speaking at the context of ensuring that the RNC was as prepared as the Democratic National Committee in terms of ensuring that they had enough poll watchers and attorneys should any problems arise. And you can bet there will be problems. Hard to imagine, but it used to be in this country, in my lifetime, used to be when you had an election, you knew the results the next morning. I don't think that's ever going to happen again. But Lara also told Eric Bolling, she says that the RNC had just won a key election integrity case in Pennsylvania and was involved in similar actions in dozens of cases around the country. And she also told Bolling that the RNC has 100,000 poll workers prepared to count how many ballots come in and how many ballots go out of every single polling location. And she said the organization was prepared to take on legally anyone believed to be cheating. This is interesting and in some ways funny. In a bold political move, the custom printing company Sticker Mule has found itself at the center of controversy after unveiling a massive 100-foot Vote for Trump sign, and they placed it in Amsterdam, New York. Now, this enormous sign is visible to over a million drivers on the New York State Thruway on a daily basis. And naturally, it's ignited both praise and outrage, with local officials filing a lawsuit over code violations. So Sticker Mule CEO, fellow by the name of Anthony Constantino, who's a staunch Trump supporter, placed the sign right atop the historic Founds Brothers Glove Factory. Now, this is a building that was once synonymous with American manufacturing before its closure back in the 1980s. And the CEO, known for his pro-American industry stance, views the sign as a symbol of the return of manufacturing jobs to the U.S., which, of course, is something that Trump has been emphasizing. And I saw a picture of it. It is huge. It's right there on the top of the old factory. I believe the factory is empty now. And it's a big illuminated sign. So we're not talking a sticker here. We're talking about something that was pretty expensive to erect. But naturally, the city of Amsterdam, led by Democratic-endorsed mayor Michael Cinquanti, has taken issue with the display. City argues that the sign violates local ordinances, claiming it poses a potential safety hazard by distracting drivers, which, of course, is complete bullcorn. Officials also allege that Constantino failed to obtain the proper permits before erecting the sign, and as a result, the city has demanded the removal of the sign. Constantino has contested, though, the city's actions, accusing local leaders of political bias. And he claims that the sign's opposition is motivated by Trump derangement syndrome, good old TDS, rather than genuine safety concerns. Well, you can bet that's what it is. I mean, I can just about tell you right now, nobody in Amsterdam's city council gives a hoot in hell about safety. Now, Sticker Mule, which is it's a company that started as a simple sticker business, and somehow they've managed to expand pretty darn quickly under Constantino's leadership. The company now employs over 1,200 people globally. And they've invested millions in revitalizing the local Amsterdam community, including the renovation of several abandoned buildings and the development of parks. So Constantino's a good guy. A good guy who views the sign as a continuation of his mission to breathe life back into the area. I don't know if you've ever been in that part of the country, but it's so depressing up there because everything looks so old and run down. Man, you go next door over into places like Connecticut? Oh, it's terrible. And it's a shame because these are beautiful parts of the country. A lot of tree-covered hills. And rolling hillsides, just beautiful landscapes. But, you know, the Rust Belt syndrome that the Democrat Party ushered into this country decades ago is just so depressing. So as the legal battle unfolds, the Vote for Trump sign has become a lightning rod for both supporters and detractors of Donald Trump. Some see the sign as a symbol of free speech, of course, and the underdog spirit, too, while others are arguing that it's a blatant code violation and a dangerous distraction for drivers. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, before that sign distracts any drivers, I'll bet you a driver's telephone, a driver's cell phone is going to distract him first. Anyhow, what remains pretty clear is that the sign's a significant cultural and political statement. And of course, it's stirring some pretty deep passions on both sides of the aisle. Another reason to be voting for Donald Trump is his policy of peace through strength. And we've been displaying anything but strength for the last 3.5 years. North Korea now has escalated their involvement in Russia's war against Ukraine by deploying military engineers to assist in launching ballistic missile strikes. Now, to what degree of proficiency North Korean engineering is these days, I don't know. But if I were to build something really technical, I don't think that I would rely on North Korea, but just the same, they're doing it, okay? Kim Jong-un is kissing up to Vlad Putin, obviously. And this deepening collaboration is coming as Moscow continues to face some pretty serious challenges. I don't think that Vlad Putin dreamed that the resistance that he's getting from Ukraine would be this difficult. But then again, Ukraine's got the strength of the United States behind it. For how much longer remains to be seen. But then, yeah, these North Korean engineers, believed to be working alongside Russian troops, are reportedly supporting the operation of these KN-23 missiles. Now, that's a North Korean short-range ballistic system previously supplied to Russia. And this represents one of the most concrete signs of North Korea's increasing military commitment to this particular conflict. Now, sources indicate that the deployment is part of a broader effort by Pyongyang to cement its alliance with Moscow. Again, as I suggested, it's Kim Jong-un kissing up to Vlad Putin. Now, this partnership, strengthened earlier this year during a strategic meeting between the fat man and the bald man, has seen North Korea supplying arms and munitions to the Russian war effort. Ukrainian military intelligence has suggested that the engineer's role includes overseeing the actual launches of missiles and maintaining equipment, which, of course, you know, that's crucial. If they're going to prosecute this war against Ukraine, this is crucial that they have experienced people to operate the machinery. And according to sources, Russia's military infrastructure is aging. And that's not good because they've got a war going on. And all their resources now, the Russian resources, are being poured into prosecuting this war. And they have very little in the way of resources to further develop new weapon systems. Now, tensions surrounding the involvement of North Korean personnel have risen, particularly following reports that several North Korean officers were killed in recent missile strikes near Donetsk. Now, Ukrainian forces claimed responsibility for an attack that took place on October 3rd, which reportedly eliminated more than 20 Russian and North Korean soldiers, thereby highlighting the risks Pyongyang's military faces on the battlefield. I will say this, I mean, as much as I'm against our involvement with Ukraine, because Ukraine is, the Ukrainian government has been extremely corrupt, almost as corrupt as our own. But I'm with the likes of Tucker Carlson and Tulsi Gabbard against this war. This is not our war. And if we don't do something about it pretty soon, and I think Donald Trump will once he reattains the Resolute desk there in the Oval Office, I think something will be done. But if we don't do something pretty soon, if we get stuck, God forbid, if we get stuck with a Kamala Harris administration, I can pretty much guarantee you, within 2 years, we will have American troops in Ukraine. Now, this growing cooperation between Russia and North Korea hasn't exactly gone unnoticed by the international community. The U.S. and our allies naturally voice concerns about the transfer of weapons and technology between those two nations. And this raises significant geopolitical challenges because you got Western governments condemning the involvement of North Korea in a conflict far beyond their borders. And North Korea really isn't that big a deal that they can afford to go getting muscular, if you know what I mean. And for Russia, this new source of military expertise and equipment is likely, well, a welcome boost, but I sure hope they're not hanging their future on it, because it is, after all, North Korea. And the war in Ukraine, if anything else, I will hand this to them. They have succeeded in severely draining Russia's stockpiles of modern weaponry. And because of that, it's leading Moscow to increasingly rely on foreign partners for support. This tells me they're not winning. And North Korea's contribution, which includes both munitions and personnel, arrives at a critical moment as Russia seeks to maintain its offensive in the face of Ukrainian resistance. And despite the clear benefits to both nations, this particular alliance presents serious humanitarian and ethical concerns. North Korea's participation in the conflict not only prolongs the suffering in Ukraine, but it also underscores the broader dangers of authoritarian regimes getting together, collaborating, forming alliances to undermine global stability. So when you hear this cry from people like me, people like Tulsi Gabbard, and Donald Trump himself has even said, we're on the threshold of World War III. I mean, when people say things like this, you cannot dismiss it. Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant issued a stern warning to Iran. This is back last Wednesday, signaling that any further aggression from Tehran would be met with a lethal, precise, and surprising response. Now, if they're smart over there in Iran, they would take Israel at their word. Now, this declaration follows an escalating series of attacks. Probably you've seen them. The mainstream media has done a fairly decent job of covering it, you know, in hopes of advancing their leftist ideology. But by default, we ended up getting the pictures, getting the stories. And this declaration is timely. So it was really following the escalation of these attacks on Israel by Iran. And it culminated in that October 1st missile barrage, which we all saw, that targeted Israeli cities. Although the assault was largely intercepted with U.S. assistance, Gallant, speaking to Israeli troops, emphasized that whoever strikes us will be harmed and pay a price. I think that's reasonable, don't you? He basically underscored Israel's preparedness for a swift counterattack. Now, if you weren't around back in the summer of 1967, during the Six-Day War, then you really don't have a clue as to what a dangerous assumption it is for anyone to go up against Israel. Israel is surrounded on three sides by people who hate them, and on the fourth side by water. A nation like that, in order to survive, has to be strong militarily. And Israel is. And however they choose to go after Iran, yeah, they have my blessing. Let's move on over to the comedy corner and the very funny David Dyer.
I am not one of these guys who pays a whole lot of attention to global warming and things like that. I'll be honest, I really don't care about those kind of things. And I'm pretty sure that's because I have two teenage daughters. And anybody out there with teenage daughters, I'm sure you'll back me up when I say that. You guys have teenage daughters? I'm sure you'll back me up when I say that there are a lot of days where I really don't care what kind of planet they're left with. I really don't care. Teenage girls, huh? You know, there's times I don't even like it when they call me dad. It just implies a level of commitment I'm not always up for. There's days they approach and I just stop them about 10 feet away. You know what? I'm Dave today. Dave doesn't have $20. Dave can't drive you to Maddie's house. With any luck, your dad will be back in a couple days. That's all I can tell you. So. The way they talk to you, it's just so sharp and just so angry. I asked my oldest daughter, I said, what do you want to do with your life? She goes, I like birds. Did you even hear the question I asked you? She goes, yeah, I like birds. I want to be an ornithologist. All right. So she's not moving out. I love them, though, man. I love having kids. And, gosh, I remember when they were little, you know, that first one. The first one scares you to death, don't they? Because that's the one you prepare for. You over-prepare. You read books. You watch videos. You go to class. You think you know everything. The water breaks. You forget everything. Right? Remember the first time I held my oldest daughter in the hospital and she pooped her diaper? I thought she was going to blow like a potato in the microwave. Because if you've ever seen an infant do that, they squeeze into a tiny little piece. And I'm screaming at my wife, get a fork, put some holes in her. If this kid blows, the insurance does not cover the cleanup, I'll guarantee you. But then you get him home. You get to figure him out at home, don't you? You get to close the door, you go, all right, let's see what we got here. You figure out they're a lot more durable than you thought. Which is great training for the second kid. Because by the time the second kid rolls around, you're a pro. You're so much more confident with your second child. Because by that time, you've been pooped on, peed on, puked on. You've used your own finger to dig a booger out of somebody else's nose. So that second kid, you don't don't even really care about that second kid, do you? I mean,
make it a terrific Tuesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.